Hello everybody and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You were tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about the show and listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/maxinethompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompsonBooks.com and MaxineThompson.com. I'm the author of novels The Ebony Tree, award-winning novel Hostage of Lies, short story collection A Place Called Home, and my latest novels are L.A. Blues and L.A. Blues 2, Slipping into Darkness. Tonight we have a special guest. She is New York Times bestselling author, Kimberla Lawson Roby. She is an award-winning and New York Times bestselling author of the Reverend Curtis Black series, as well as several other standalone novels and novellas. She lives with her husband in Rockford, Illinois. You can visit her website at www.kimroby.com and find her on Facebook and Twitter. Her latest book is The Reverend's Wife. Good evening. How are you doing, Kimberla?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, great. I'm glad to have you back. It's only been about 6 months, 7 months.
I know it.
Yes. Well, you sound like you're going to have a really busy couple of years coming up. So before we get into that, please tell the audience about yourself for those who aren't familiar with you.
Okay. Well, I am actually an author of 17 titles. Started my career back in 1995 when I wrote my first book, Behind Closed Doors. Tried to get it published toward the very end of that year, going into early 1996, received tons of rejection letters from literary agents and then ultimately from editors at publishing houses, and moved forward at the encouragement of my husband and my mom to self-publish. So I started my company in June of 1996, published the first book. Excuse me, and then was able to find an agent in early 97, ended up selling just over 10,000 copies within the first 6 months of release. Excuse me, I'm so sorry. And then she actually sold my second book to a New York publisher, and I have been published with a major publisher ever since then. And in 2008, since then, with the exception of 1 year, I started doing two books a year versus one.
That's great. I know you, what was the book you came on the show before with, it was...
Last fall, Secret Obsession.
Secret Obsession,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, boy, that's good, though, when you're having them come out like that. That really keeps the audience engaged a lot more than when it's a two-year lapse and a one-year lapse.
Mm-hmm. I think it really does make a difference, and for a while, my readers have been asking, you know, will you ever think about doing more than one book a year, and so I didn't for a very, very long time, and then finally decided, with me writing the Curtis Black series and readers asking for that every year, and then thinking about so many other topics that I really wanted to write about, I thought, well, maybe that would be the thing to do the second part of the year, and so that's really what, you know, kind of gave me the idea, and I spoke with my editor and said that I wanted to do it, and she agreed, and so I've been kind of doing that ever since then.
Has it made it a difference in your writing schedule?
I think that it has, you know, to a certain extent, because I don't have as much time off. When I was writing one book a year, there would be really months that I really didn't have to do a whole lot at all, maybe travel to some of the events, because I do that throughout the year. Now I have to really pay attention and have a calendar and know what I'm going to be doing at all times from January through December, and especially because I always try to watch out for the holidays. I don't like to do any traveling at all in November and December unless it's absolutely necessary or it's an event that I really just feel passionate about. So, yeah, it does make a difference. You know, it's really double the work in comparison to what I used to do, but it's doable, and I probably doable because I enjoy it, and so that really seems to work out.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, I'm glad that you have more books coming out. This one has made me have to go back and read. I haven't read the Reverend series because there's so many references. I said, what? Oh, my goodness. He did that? And, but it seems like, well, you've got to talk about it. To me, it just sounds like the wife is the bad guy, so you got to have to give some backstory. Why did you write the Reverend's wife?
Well, as the story opens, Charlotte is Curtis's third wife. They've been married for 11 years. They've had lots of ups and downs, lots of obstacles to try to overcome. There's been infidelity on both their parts. Each of them have had children outside of the marriage, and so they've really, really been through a lot. You know, the only thing that has sort of kept them together is that through it all, they have always loved each other, and they have a certain chemistry and a certain connection, and you know, just a very strong bond outside of them really making really, really bad choices when it comes to their relationship. But, you know, kind of going back a number of years, Curtis actually was married to his first wife. Her name was Tanya. And then he started seeing Charlotte at that time. Charlotte was only at the age of 18. And so they had a child. He didn't see the child for many years. He eventually ruined his marriage to his first wife, moved on to a second wife, Mariah, and a second church. Eventually was ousted from the second church, the same as the first. His second wife finally had enough, and she divorced him. And, you know, a whole lot more happened with that without giving that story away. And then he did marry Charlotte. The only difference is that Charlotte is his match. So she's every bit of what he used to be and then some, and so he's really struggling with that because he's working very hard, doing all that he can, fighting temptation, and is really a good husband to her now. And he's faithful, he's a good pastor, he's a great father, but Charlotte just doesn't get it. She's, you know, pretty selfish wife, and when she doesn't get what she wants or things don't go the way that she wants them to go, she acts out, and unfortunately her acting out is with other men. And so he's decided in this book that enough is enough, and you know, it's just not working, it's time to move on. And he tells her straight out, I'm filing for a divorce, and you know, we can stay in the house together, we can remain cordial with each other, but once Matthew graduates high school and he heads to Harvard in the fall, I'm filing the papers. And so she's doing everything to try to save the marriage, but is unsuccessful because Curtis has really made up his mind, and it doesn't help that there is another woman in the church named Sharon who's doing everything she can to try to become the next Mrs. Curtis Black. And so, of course, that just adds even more fuel to the fire and causes more problems than they were already having in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, the son that the question I'm having as I'm reading the book, since I didn't read the other books in the series, the son that she has is 18. Is that, that's not Reverend's biological, that's not Curtis Black's son, is it?
The son, Matthew?
Matthew.
Yes, that is Curtis's son. There was a time when they didn't think it was, but yeah, he definitely is.
Wait a minute, but they've only been married 11 years. Was she married to someone else when she had this boy?
No, Curtis was married to his first wife when she gave birth to Matthew, so he was the one who was sort of out messing around, and the wife found out about it, and she ended up leaving Curtis. And so Curtis didn't connect with Charlotte for years even after that because her father forbid, you know, just sort of forbade him to have anything to do with his daughter and his grandson. And so Matthew actually was seven, but he was seven by the time he met Curtis for the first time.
Well, how about, there was another question that came up in my mind about Curtis. Well, I'll come back to it. What was the inspiration for this book? Have you seen people like this? It sounds almost like a soap opera.
Well, the thing is I've been in church my entire life, and so I've seen it all. I've, you know, heard much more than I ever would have cared to or wanted to. And so it really is based on a lot of real-life experiences, but not any exact situation. So I don't write about exactly what has happened when I've seen or heard or somebody's told me something, and I don't write the exact same physical characteristics or the same problems that have happened, say, with a certain pastor and a wife. But again, I'm inspired just by the idea of problems and corruption and social issues that go on in the church. Sometimes issues that are hush-hush, that people don't feel as comfortable talking about openly, but certainly topics we need to be discussing. And so I just really have taken what I've learned throughout the years. I've been in church. I always say, I used to say ever since I was born, but I've been going there since my mom carried me there in her womb. And so not a lot of research has to be done. And I've always thought it was interesting how I have to do lots of research for all of my other books that I write, whatever those subjects are, because I just don't know a whole lot about it. But when it comes to my Curtis Black series, I almost never have to research anything. And you know, it's just something I've seen and heard for a long, long time. Now, I guess I should say my entire life for the most part.
Oh, now I remember my question. Who is Curtina's mother, the little girl that the wife didn't like, and now she loves her, Charlotte loves his little girl, Curtina. Who is her mother? I guess he got someone pregnant while they were married. Is that what happened?
Yes, he did, and she actually passed away. And so Charlotte has had to become a mother to Curtina. And, you know, things are great now in this story, in the Reverend's wife, but there was a time where she hated the little girl and just wanted her out of the house and wanted nothing to do with her. And that's really what pushed her to go out and have the affairs that she had, because she was just so beside herself that Curtis had brought this child into the house and she didn't want her to be there.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the discussion questions in the reading guide.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to give away too much of the story, but what is the difference between forgiving and forgetting?
No, I think there's a big difference, because many times we'll say, you know, I forgive you, but I certainly won't ever forget it. You hear people say that all the time, and I've heard them say it even when I was younger. And my mom used to talk about that. And what she would say is, if somebody says they forgive somebody, but they won't forget it, it really means deep down they've not forgiven them. Because if you've truly forgiven someone, you can be okay with that person again. You can still love them. You can still treat them as well as you used to before whatever happened between you. And so I think that's a big difference. But forgiveness is very hard, especially if you have really been hurt or you feel like you've been betrayed by someone. Somebody has really disappointed you. Someone has bad-mouthed you, and maybe it's somebody you thought who would never, ever do it. And so I think it's tough. And, you know, in the Bible, we know that it says we are supposed to forgive, and we certainly want to be forgiven by God when we do things that we're not supposed to do, but it is very hard as a human being to forgive a person who has really done wrong by you.
Okay. Well, my second question is, unlike how he has forgiven his father, Matthew seems to be unable to forgive his mother for her affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Does Matthew have a right to be angry at Charlotte, or should he remain neutral where his parents are concerned?
Well, I think that it's probably no differently than how most people in society tend to view infidelity when you're talking about whether it's the wife or the husband. People just don't look as hard or as down on a man when he has an affair on his wife versus when a wife goes out and does it. They just see that woman as being this awful, awful person, and this person who has just totally disrespected herself and her husband and the entire family. And I think Matthew looks at her and thinking, wow, Mom, I thought you were better than this, and you should have been better than this. And it's a double standard, but he doesn't hold her, you know, to the same regard as he does, you know, with his father. He expects so much more of her and really doesn't have the same relationship with her now, having found out what she's done to his dad.
He didn't even know his father until he was seven.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But he loves his dad and has a very, very close relationship with him. And so it is interesting, but he is very, very angry at his mom. And he has had his moments of being angry with Curtis, but never to the extent of how he is feeling about Charlotte currently.
Well, do you think Curtis is justified in feeling that Charlotte's affairs are more severe than his own?
I do. I think so. I mean, I think, and I guess you can kind of look at it both ways. You know, he has done what he's done to his first wife and his second wife, and he actually had an affair on Charlotte, but that was only after she had an affair. In their marriage, she was the first one to do that. So now, you know, fast-forwarding to today, she's had two additional affairs, and I think Curtis looks at it as, wow, you know, I did what I did, and now I've got three men that I can look back to. you know, and know that you have slept with and that you've gone outside of the marriage three different times in just 11 years. And so to him, you know, a sin is a sin and being unfaithful is being unfaithful. But I think he's looking at the fact that she just won't stop doing what she's doing. And he sees this as being worse than what he's done.
So in his third marriage, he was almost faithful.
He was. And, you know, had she not gone out and had an affair, and at that time it was with his best friend even. I mean, that's kind of how low Charlotte was at that point. He never would have. But even once he did, he, you know, realized, okay, it's time to turn my life around, and he really did. And he has kept his word for a number of years now. But, you know, as I said, Charlotte is just, you know, doing something a little different and, you know, just acts out whenever she feels like acting out and just prefers to deal with the consequences after the fact, just not realizing he'd get to a point of saying, I really want a divorce now.
And with her being the first lady, mm-hmm. is there any accountability in the church?
You know, I think that it is, and I always recognize that when you're talking about a pastor, when you're talking about a pastor's wife, they are human beings no differently than any of us. They fall short. They make mistakes the same as we do. They commit sins that they have to pray for it the same as we do, you know, no matter how small or big people might want to categorize them as. But at the same time, I think that when you are a pastor, you know, you should be held to at least a little bit of a higher standard and maybe even more, a big higher standard or a much larger higher standard, because you are saying that you've been called by God to preach and you are leading God's people, and, you know, that's your responsibility to be an example. And so even if you make mistakes, I always feel like that, you know, as a pastor and even as a pastor's wife, you should at least be trying to do the right thing. You should be striving to live the best life that you can live, even if you do make a mistake here and there. It's when you have someone like Charlotte who just continues to do wrong and wrong and wrong, and, you know, and until she has to do right. And that's only right now she's probably feeling more like that, because Curtis is saying he's going to leave her, you know, but what about the next time? And so I think that's where I do feel like there is a difference, and that you are in a certain position and you have to treat it as such.
Well, do you have an excerpt you can read from your book? That's kind of a cliffhanger.
You know, I actually wasn't prepared to do that. I'm sorry. So we'll probably have to just continue.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think? I should have mentioned that to you when I called you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, don't have it in front of me.
Okay. Well, what do you think about Curtis's? Well, no, let's talk about this one. I really like this question. Instead of turning to his wife for comfort and support, Curtis slowly but surely develops a secret friendship with Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of friendship between a married person and someone who is not his or her spouse is often described as an emotional affair. Do you think an emotional affair is less serious, more serious, or equivalent to a physical affair, and why?
You know, I've always thought, just thinking about it, emotional affair to me would have to be more devastating, I would think. And, of course, this part I actually did research, just looking at what psychologists and counselors and just relationship therapists, what they've had to say. And the reason being is that if someone sleeps with someone, and say they even just have a one-night stand, well, that's physical. You know, people do that for whatever their reasons are. They move on in the story. But if someone has an emotional affair, they have a relationship with someone, they are confiding in that person, they're spending more time having conversation or even just spending time more with that person than they do their spouse, that's when you really created this connection, you know, and you have a certain bond, and you're almost saying that, wow, this is more your confidant now than the person that you're married to. And so I think that's much worse. You know, I know people don't want to even think about the fact that their husband or wife might go out and have a physical affair, but again, I think the emotional is the one that could cause the most damage.
And it happens more because people are working together with mm-hmm. opposite
mm-hmm.
sex, too.
You do. You hear so much about, you know, what happens in the workplace with coworkers, and it's so much more common than ever before. And even this whole thing with social media, Facebook, people who are just communicating, you know, back and forth, and, you know, with instant messaging or by inbox, and, you know, they're doing that daily throughout the day and well into the evening, not realizing, wow, they're spending much more time still with that person than with the person that they're married to.
could be a case of people like what happened in Detroit, my hometown, where they're on the cell phone and having this lurid affair over the cell phone and the records get captured. And it, you would think with the new media, people would say, "Ooh, I'm not going to get caught." You know, there used to be people that snuck around, had affairs for years, and never got caught. But it seemed like the newer generation is more transparency because of the social media.
And
they got a written record right in front of you.
And they really aren't being as careful as they need to be about it. And even publicly, you know, you find people posting things, and a lot of times I will just see different comments, and a lot of times it is from younger people. Sometimes it's just from anybody. It doesn't matter how old they are. And I'm always thinking, wow, I hope they never have to apply for a certain job and have, you know, anyone from human resources at that company go through their history to see some of the things they said. They may be the most qualified candidate, but they likely won't be hired because of it. So social media has not been the best thing for some people. It's been really, you know, a detriment more than a benefit.
Right. There are certain things I think that it's too much information that they put up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of them are young, and, you know, and I love when people are reporting good news. Graduations,
yes.
Recently, weddings, anniversaries.
Right,
all that
right.
Is nice, and birth of grandchildren, birth
mm-hmm.
of babies. But you can kind of go overboard, and you can end up getting your child kidnapped. You put too much up there.
And you are so right about that. So I agree. But, yeah, it was amazing. You know, Facebook, of course, has been around for a little while now, and then now Twitter. But you'd be amazed. I mean, you literally can Google and find stories on marriages that have broken up. They literally have broken up because of one person connecting with an old flame, you know, or sometimes it may even be somebody totally brand new that they met online and, you know, started an affair, and that's where it all began. And that's interesting. It doesn't even seem logical to me that you could connect that way, but it is certainly happening across the board.
Yes, and some have even left their families. One woman left 5 children. And where my niece works, she has to get, one woman even went to Australia with a man she met online. And then where my niece works, she has to get tickets to help people when they get stranded in other countries
mm-hmm.
in situations like this. So women beware.
Yeah,
and men
for
too.
Sure.
You know. And there you can meet serial killers, anything.
Exactly.
It would happen with the Craigslist serial killer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting, though. Relationships, I think they've changed because of social media. It's more temptation than there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And people, particularly when they're young, they're a lot more vulnerable. And I don't think there used to be a big, strong social moray to have fidelity in a relationship, and maybe because they don't even show that in the movies anymore. The morals are too loose now for people.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. You know, times have totally, totally changed. And, you know, the respect that, as you said, you know, people used to have for the institution of marriage is just not quite the same. And, you know, for me, I'm still that old-fashioned person. I just still believe in the traditional values, you know, the godly values that, hey, you know, I love my husband. I have no desire to want to be with another man. Don't even think about it. You know, I'm offended if somebody even speaks to me, if it's a man speaking to me in the wrong way and he knows that I'm married. And, you know, so unfortunately we've gotten away from that. I think so many people have, and they just really, really need to get back to it.
Well, is it okay for a married man, speaking of that, is it okay for a married man or woman to have a close friend of the opposite sex?
So, you know, I think that you can have a close friend, but I don't think you should have this constant communication going on. And the reason I say that is because if you were to have issues or a tough time or, you know, just a little bit of a problem maybe going on in your marriage, and you have this really close friend of the opposite sex, that's probably who you're going to be talking about it to. And, you know, it may start out one way, but the next thing you know, it's kind of going back to what we talked about before. Now you're spending more time talking to this friend, and this person has become your confidant, and they understand. And so you're happy when you're talking to that person, and you may be miserable at this moment with your spouse. And I think it can turn into something else, and I've seen it turn in to something else. So I'm just totally against that. So, you know, for example, and my husband, Will, he even laughs at me about this. When I met him and when I realized how serious it was and, you know, we were in love, we knew that happened pretty much right away, and then we were already talking about possibly getting married. Any guy that I was friends with, that I spoke to on the phone, sometimes went out to dinner with, they didn't have to call me to find out. I made calls to each of them and said, look, you know, I've met somebody. It's serious. I'm not going to be in a position to talk to you on the phone anymore. Won't be able to see you anymore. I mean, I ended it all. So, you know, almost 22 years, he can never say, wow, I had to be there when Kim answered the phone, you know, and I had to listen to a phone conversation from somebody she maybe used to date or just used to be really good friends with, as I didn't feel like he should have to deal with that. So, you know, I'm just very strict on that. I just do not believe that that's a good thing for anyone. I've never thought that.
Well, they have this new TV show, Let's Stay Together, and that's where I'm becoming aware of the different rules that they have for marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the wanting to go out with someone that you used to sleep with and different things like that. So, wait a minute.
See, never, I
nobody
can't
that understanding.
No, absolutely not. I mean, why would you need to? No, why would you need to ever go out with somebody you used to date if you're married? I just don't understand what the reason would be.
Yeah, but a lot of things I'm just saying that have changed. And then even in the show, The Game, that's kind of changing.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it better maybe. I think it always helps in a book and a TV show. When you have unfulfilled or thwarted desires, and that's what's going on that's pulling me through this book. Is she going to be able to win him back? Is he going to forgive her?
Mm-hmm.
And I think in The Game, Melanie and Derwin never could get together. And now that they're together, it is just, I don't know, didn't have that same fizzle. But then I also felt like a lot of the love that I felt before was missing in the characters, too.
Yes, I think so, too. My husband and I, we both watched that, and I thought the same thing. It's like, you know, they've gone back and forth so much, it doesn't even feel the same. It almost were to the point where you didn't even care whether they were going to stay together or not. I mean, that's kind of how I felt toward the end. It's like, wow, maybe you guys need to go your separate way, you know, because neither of them really, to me, you know, saw the marriage as a priority. That's really kind of how I felt most of the time. They didn't see that as their priority. Everything else pretty much came before it.
Right, and it just seemed like that special something they had for each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could rewatch that season where they got married and where she's sitting there crying.
Yes.
At the wedding when he has to leave to go.
To the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to see his baby born. But you could still understand. You felt like that love is what got them through that.
You really did.
Got married with no one there.
Mm-hmm.
But now they got all this money, and it just looked like they just haven't seemed like a couple like when they were struggling. I don't
Mm-mm.
know.
Mm-mm. Nope. And that's just it. I mean, it's the material things can do that. But I still think this. I mean, you know, money can cause people to do some strange things and, you know, lose sense of what's important, and, you know, it can affect so many different things. But at the same time, I think that if you get to a point where the communication has broken down, you know, you're not really on the same page, and that, again, you're not keeping each other first, it doesn't matter really whether you have the money or not. I just think that's really what it's all about. And I say that because, for me, I've always said it's God, you know, it's my husband, and then it's everything else. And I've never changed that. You know, even with my career, there have been times where I feel like, okay, gosh, I've really worked a lot, you know, and I've worked a lot, say, in a certain month, and I've not spent as much time with my husband as I normally would have because I've been so used to doing that the whole time I've with them. And I'll have to step back and take a look at that. You know, not so much now, but I used to, you know, over the last few years. There were a couple of times where I thought, gosh, you know, you know, work is work, and I love what I do, and I certainly love my readers. My readers know that, and I make that very clear all the time. But, you know, your marriage has to come first, and I try my best to always remember that. You know, and my husband does the same thing. I think that is what matters more than anything else.
Well, that's great, because just, I don't know, just evaluating some of the new shows, the marriages, I'm putting a lot of unnecessary stress on them
mm-hmm.
with all the material. Like when Melanie tried to bring in the threesome, which she,
yes,
you know,
that's when
what is this?
Yeah, I was like, that's gone too far. That's when I thought it was a bit much, because not ever in my natural life would I think that was okay. Not ever would I think that's okay.
Yes, and I think is that they read the things, you know, that the writers, and me being a writer, I say, well, you know, the writers are introducing social topics,
mm-hmm.
and they're not really following through with them. Things are coming up out of here and there, so I just said, well, hopefully next season.
Yeah, and it is, but what's unfortunate is that I'm sure that some of those storylines actually represent what some people are going through and how they actually, you know, communicate back and forth in their marriage and what their relationship is like, and that's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
No, I said, well, if you need to have a threesome, why are you even married in the first place? Doesn't make any sense to me.
Then the other thing with the Let's Stay Together, she's the one that, you know, is always feeling it's all right to go have drinks with her ex. And, oh, boy, so I just said maybe women have, you know, I know women are more liberated, and I work on a lot of books of younger writers, and just everything I see, I said, well, maybe it was my generation. They do too much. They're a little bit too masculine acting. I mean, they're a little bit too aggressive.
Uh-huh, and that could be it, and that's how I feel, too. It's like, oh, maybe I must be getting old as well, because, you know, as I said, I mean, I just know the traditional way, you know, the way I was raised up, the way I saw my grandparents and my parents, and that's just really the way I try to live my life. I've never looked to anything else, and so I am sometimes offended by things that I think most people are just okay with, you know, that younger generation. But most of us, you know, when you're talking your 40s, 50s, 60s, I think we just view it a little differently.
Because we see the end results of it. We
mm-hmm.
see the divorces, and mm-hmm. I've always been of the mind that two can have more than one. And when you're seeing children struggling because their parents broke up on something that was nonsense that they might could have worked through, you know, somebody
mm-hmm.
wanted to run the nightclubs when they're supposed to be married. You cannot be single and be married and live a single life.
No, absolutely not. My grandmother used to always say that. She used to talk about how, you know, when you get married, and yeah, you may still have friends who are not married and they're single, but you can't spend as much time with them anymore. You know, you start looking for friends that have husbands, you know, and try to do things with them if you want to get together, you know, you and your husband outside of the marriage, or even if you want to just hang out with some girlfriends to go shopping, do whatever it is, but you really need to start focusing more on married women. You don't, you know, stop being friends with your single friends, but you certainly have to treat that relationship a little differently if you want to have a certain type of marriage. And not everybody feels that way, because I know people who, you know, they do go out on a regular basis with their friends, and their husbands go out with their friends, you know, and it's a separate thing. And to me, again, I just feel like, you know, why even be married? You know, you do want to have your individual lives, and you need to have your individual lives, but I just think there's some things that just aren't necessarily good for you and your relationship.
Yes, it's really hard today because, too, of, you know, like I say, the loosening morals, and for people who, they call it, now I understand they call it the jump-off woman.
Mm-hmm.
I just worked on, and they used to call it the cleanup woman in my earlier days. Now they call it the jump-off, but I mean, they standing around like they got rights. And
uh-huh.
I just worked on a book that's got a lot of controversy around it, but it's got a lot to do with when your husband is a high-paid athlete,
mm-hmm.
women are going to be swarmed around like flies. It's like the women have to spend almost 50% of the relationship trying to weed out the jump-off women and the women trying to have a baby by
mm-hmm.
them so that they can get child support. And it's
imagine.
Sad. I said,
yeah.
What has happened to women?
Yeah, so it's a different day. That's, I guess, all we can say. And that's not every young woman, because I do know lots of young women who, you know, do want to do the right thing. They want to have a good marriage, and they want to be good mothers, and, you know, they want to be the type of woman that really is there and takes care of her family. But, you know, there are some who just view things a lot differently than we ever did, and they just see things in a different light.
I think it's the soap operas. They really believe that they can cheat and confess and get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like Charlotte. Now, I don't know how she got caught.
Mm-hmm.
I once heard an older lady say when I was really young, she said, if I do anything, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. So I don't know how Charlotte got caught, but it is not a good thing. I don't care what has happened. Men can be forgiven, but women, you might as well pack your little bag when you get caught.
It's a big difference. Yeah, women are a lot more forgiving of men than men can ever be. They just can't get over it usually. So.
Yeah, they spend all the time. I can see just the chapters I read. Curtis spends all his time thinking about what she did. He get mad just thinking about it.
Uh-huh, yep, just replaying it over and over and over again, and as if he was there when it happened. I mean, he's, you know, played it so much in his mind. But, yeah, it's a big difference. It's certainly a different thing when a man goes out and has an affair versus when a woman does it.
Well, you really have brought in some controversial issues for this to be Christian fiction, and it's very clean. But the subject matter is so, you know, it's really, what's the word, edgy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that you bring in topics like this. A lot of the church needs to discuss it, because really what happens in church, you're around each other a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known where couples at the religion I was in, where some couples end up swapping and leaving their wife to be with, you say they went out together.
Oh, my.
And it can happen. You can start getting attracted to the other person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you even have to be careful sometimes when you're in the church a lot, where people can become attracted to someone.
Oh, for sure. That's one of the main places, I hate to say. You definitely have to be careful. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, I've written about Reverend Curtis Black, and, you know, there's so many stories just in the news where, you know, a pastor maybe has had an affair, but what people don't talk about as much is the number of women who go after the men in the church, and they know those men are married. So, you know, I said we have to be fair. It's not just the men. It is the women who just really don't have a problem with going after a married man. They see nothing wrong with it.
Right. That's that was what I meant by the jump off. I'm not meaning that all single women are like that. I know a lot of single women who say, oh, no, you can't talk to me if you're married.
But for sure. There's plenty that would never do it. But
a lot of women, they just they don't care.
Mm-mm.
Well, let me see if we have any emails. Do we have any emails? Trying to catch Corey.
No, not at the moment, Maxine, but if we have any, I'll chime in, all right?
Okay, and plus, this show will be archived at artistfirst.com within the next few days, and it can be downloaded for future listening, and I'm sure people are listening because they want to know what you're talking about. This is an interesting subject. Well, let's talk about Tanya. What do you think about Curtis's phone call to Tanya?
Well, you know, Tanya, of course, is the first wife, and that's who he had his first child with. His daughter's name is Alicia, and he's very, very close to that daughter. But he's never fully stopped loving Tanya. And, you know, he's thought many, many times over the years the way he treated her and how wonderful of a wife she was to him, how much she loved him. She was totally committed to him and just really couldn't have asked for a better partner. But he just totally took advantage of it and, you know, had one affair after another and just totally misused her. And so he's thinking about that now, of course, going through what he's going through with Charlotte, you know, really getting a double dose of his own medicine back and really is thinking, wow, you know, I wonder if Tanya feels the same way. And so, you know, at the very, very beginning of the book, that's who he's thinking about and recognizing that I still love her and I've never really stopped loving her. And of course, has a conversation with her that, you know, readers will have to read to find out more about. But it's just, you know, an interesting thing that while he's always known he still had feelings for her, it just seems like it's more so now. It's more so noticeable to him because he's so miserable in his current marriage.
Okay. Well, speaking of that, how about divorce?
Mm-hmm.
You have a question here. Divorce can be a difficult issue for a family to face, especially when children are involved. Curtis is very open with Matthew about his plans to divorce Charlotte, but he shelters Curtina from the situation. Do you think he was right to do so?
No, I think that he was, because when adults are going through problems, they're having major marital problems, and of course in this case contemplating and actually planning for a divorce, that really at this point when you're talking about a child that young, it's not something that really needs to be brought about. And of course there will come a time, you know, as they move closer to the divorce and having to separate the households, you know, she'll have to be told. But I just think right now it's better that she just go on business as usual until it's, you know, they really have no choice but to tell her what's happening.
Okay, deciding to end a marriage is never easy. Charlotte wants to continue to work on their relationship, but Curtis is resolved to end it. His assistant suggests counseling, but Curtis resists this idea. What might you have advised Curtis to do to save his marriage?
And I think counseling definitely would have been a good idea, and it's interesting how he does marital counseling himself but doesn't really think that he needs it. And so I think sometimes you hear that, you know, many times people who are in a situation, you know, they may be able to give the best advice to others who are going through problems or trying to overcome certain obstacles, but they just don't see that they need that same kind of help as well. And so that's what he's dealing with. But the other thing is maybe to just take a really, really long look at his own life and some of the things that he's done throughout the years, and recognizing that nobody's perfect, and that, yeah, maybe he hasn't done as much to Charlotte, you know, as she has talked about, but he's certainly done a lot just over the years to a number of different people, and not even talking about women and affairs. He's just done a lot of dirt, so to speak, and he's had a lot to pray about and a lot to be forgiven for. And so that's one thing. And then the other thing is just thinking about, you know, he took vows. He really took marital vows. Not saying that a person should just stay in a marriage no matter how badly somebody treats them, but at the same time, he probably should be taking a better look at it, a much longer look than he has already.
Well, let's talk about the character Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
What role does Sharon play in this whole mess?
Well, Sharon has decided that Curtis is the man for her and that she can be the perfect wife to him, and is even telling him she could certainly be a much better wife than Charlotte has ever been since the day he married her. And so she's doing everything she can to try to spend time with him, constantly calling him on the phone, trying to get him to come and visit her, and just does everything, showing up at church, you know, saying things in Bible study that, you know, she probably shouldn't necessarily be saying. And she's just this particular woman who's decided, I'm going to take this man from his wife because I'm a better woman for him. She's made that up in her mind, and she's really willing to do whatever she has to make that happen.
Yes, now I've seen that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Spend a lot of energy on that. It's sad, too. One of the things you brought in was alcoholism. I deal with that in L.A. Blues, so let me add your question here. Everyone has different ways of dealing with stress, some healthier than others. When the stress of her situation becomes too much, Charlotte turns to alcohol. Do you think Charlotte is an alcoholic?
No, she is to a certain extent, and she, of course, doesn't believe that. But anytime somebody turns to alcohol, whenever they can't deal with a problem, whenever they find themselves, you know, dealing with a certain amount of pain, devastation, disappointment, there are times when she finds herself depressed or just really finding herself being miserable. And so if you need that, if you feel like I need to have a drink just to get through the next few hours or the next day, and then you need another and another, you know, certainly there's a problem there, and it's one that really needs to be dealt with.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that in, because see, they never talk about alcohol in the church.
Mm-mm.
Too.
Mm-mm. Nope, most people just assume, you know, you're Christians, you know, this is who we're talking about, and so they don't even drink a glass of wine, let alone get drunk, and I think people are under, you know, that perception, and they really want to believe that. But doesn't matter Christian or not, the same problems go on with people, you know, no matter who you're talking about, and nobody's left out. I actually, ironically, have a book coming out in January called The Perfect Marriage, and, you know, kind of similar but a little bit different. It's a couple who earn well into the six figures, both of them. They have a beautiful home, they have a beautiful daughter, and have what most people would consider the American dream, just the perfect life. What the husband doesn't know is that the wife has been taking Vicodin much longer than she's needed to for an injury that she had, and that he has been socially using cocaine with co-workers. And so eventually, as the story continues, they both learn what the other is doing and, you know, almost join forces. And you get to see just how devastating drug use, whether you're talking about illegal drugs or prescription drugs, how devastating it is, not just on them and their marriage, but just as their family as a whole.
And, you know, we've had more people overdose on prescription drugs than celebrities. And,
yes. And
I don't know how Rodney King drowned, but it sounded like it might have been some substance abuse.
Yeah, he seemed to still have a pretty big struggle with that. You know, some of the interviews that I had seen on CNN with him just over this last year even, you know, you could tell he was still having a very tough time. And, you know, Whitney Houston, you know, still breaks my heart, you know, just to think about, you know, what she was going through and, you know, just wishing. And I always just say, gosh, I just wish there had been something within her that just could have stopped her. You know, this would have told her, I don't have to do this anymore. But, you know, unfortunately, it has really started to affect more and more people. And I think it is because people tend to think, well, it's not that bad because it's legal. You know, you can get a prescription for this, and you won't go to jail for using this. And people don't realize just how strong and just how lethal it can really be to your system if you're getting too much of it.
Yes, it's sad, and life is hard, and we all want to escape.
Mm-hmm.
But it, sometimes with the new prescription drugs, you end up in a lot more trouble than the people who own alcohol or even the heroin users. Some of them go back 30 years, but now you've got these new pills, Vicodin, where people are dying within a few years of using them. So
mm-hmm.
I said, well, it makes me look at the pharmaceutical industry kind of sideways. It makes me wonder, now, wait a minute. This is like legal drug dealing, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You seem like you can pay attention to some of the people who are coming there. And I have a friend who's actually a nurse and is talking about how there was a situation where somebody was literally going to the emergency room just to get painkillers intravenously. I mean, literally, they just would go and say something was wrong with them and, you know, use that and was able to get the drugs that way. And I thought, wow, can you imagine somebody literally getting in their car, driving to the emergency room, pretending like something's wrong with them just because they know what's going to be administered to them if they say that. That's amazing to me.
Yes, drugs are powerful. They change the whole person. They're like they become the god for that person. And
mm-hmm.
the things they would do to try to get them, I've had clients tell me that they've fallen on the floor looking for a dot that they thought was crack cocaine.
Oh, my goodness.
It might have been just a little bit of dust. And I've had them tell me how they lost top careers and ran companies. It has derailed Fortune 500 companies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And see, I'm here near Hollywood where a lot of the stars, when they get together, they have recreational drug use.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, they don't tell about that, but it's a lot of things going on now that could give a writer a lot of fodder to write about.
It's for sure. It is. It's, you know, all very unfortunate, and, you know, you hate that it's happening, but it is certainly the reality.
Right, and when people read about it, maybe they can get healed and say, ooh, I don't need to do that. I'm doing this, and see it as a cautionary tale.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like you say, it's so sad about Whitney, and then they went to name, and I saw a list of all these different entertainers who had died in the last 10 years from drugs, and
mm-hmm.
it was most of it was prescription drugs.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot more than I think people have paid attention to.
Also, well, then at the end of your book, and I kind of jumped ahead, you know, I read as a writer, mm-hmm. about Matthew and his girlfriend.
Yeah, so it's like I'm not saying that out loud.
Yeah, don't talk about that. Yeah. Well, that's a nice little twist, mm-hmm. because that happens too.
Yeah, and it does. It does. So, you know, needless to say, the next book will focus pretty heavily on Matthew's life, a lot more than it has with, you know, any of the other books. And, you know, I think readers will be interested in knowing how that turns out.
Yes, that will be interesting. Well, when you were writing this particular sequel, did you have a hard time with it?
You know, not really at all. And I think it's because I've really, of course, at this point, gotten to really, really know the characters, Curtis and Charlotte. And, you know, I've always had this great love for Matthew because regardless of how awful his parents have been throughout the years, they have certainly not been, you know, the best examples as parents. But he has always been a great kid. He's always had a great heart and just always has tried to do the right thing no matter what. And so he's been my favorite. Alicia, you know, she's the eldest child and is a lot like her father, the old father, you know, the old Curtis. And so she has her demons that she's dealing with and, you know, has a lot to learn. And so, I care about them. It's interesting, you know, you hear writers all the time say, well, I really care about my characters or I root for them. Or even if they don't do the right thing, I'm hoping that they will. And you want to see them learn from their mistakes. And so that's really how I feel about the Reverend Curtis Black storyline, the entire Black family and even some of the secondary characters. And so really those are probably my easiest books for me to write right now because I'm just continuing their stories and in the way that they move along, you know, just one chapter after another.
Right, and one of the things I see that you don't hold back on torturing the characters, a lot of writers want to protect their characters because, mm-hmm. as you say, you love them. They become sort of like family members.
They really do. They really do.
But you can't hold back. You got to throw it at them or it will not be a book.
No, it won't be. And I really, from the very beginning, I made the decision that I wanted to write about real-life characters, real-life social issues, and that even if it meant writing about controversial topics and taboo topics, that that's what I would do because I wanted it to be real. I didn't want to write stories that I felt like I needed to sugarcoat because that's not real life. You know, sometimes people go through the worst of worst, even if it means, you know, losing a loved one, even if it means somebody is, you know, killed tragically, you know, whatever it might be. We know that it really happens in real life, and I'm always hoping to portray that and show just what, you know, some of the outcomes will be.
You know, one of the things I think that your stories show are how bad choices can lead to bad consequences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Always. And that's my big theme, I guess, in so many of my books is that if you do the right thing, you know, if you don't do what God would expect you to do, that these will be the consequences, and you'll, you know, surely have to deal with them. You will reap what you sow. You know, nobody makes bad choices in my books, and they really just get away with it. Even if they get away with it in this story, you can guarantee, you know, they're going to see it down the road somewhere.
Yes. Does Curtis feel like he's reaping what he sowed at all?
Mm-hmm. He does. He definitely, definitely does. And, you know, there was a time in his life where he started thinking, I want to do right, and I'm not able to. He would compare himself to Paul in the book of Romans, you know, not even understanding, why do I even do these things? He had just gotten so fed up with doing the wrong thing, and then, of course, starting to deal with the consequences. And, you know, it's been a life, and, you know, he still has some issues in him. They have not come out necessarily in a long time, but he still struggles.
Well, Kim, give out your website, and also, well, you said you're through with your tour, but, you know, anything, the conferences that you said you'll mm-hmm. be participating in, please give those out.
Well, actually, I have an event coming up in Atlanta, Georgia on Wednesday, July 18th, and it's at a bar restaurant called Altitude in the W Hotel downtown Atlanta, and it's actually being hosted by V103. The R&B radio station there. So I'm really looking forward to that. I think it's at 6 p.m. And then in August, I'm doing an event with Crenshaw Christian Center there in Los Angeles. And they're actually finalizing the location, so I'll be posting that pretty soon. But that's actually going to be on Saturday, August 11th, during the daytime. So I will need the posted time as well once we have that confirmed. And then I have another church event that's actually at a hotel, and that's listed on my website as well, in Fairfield, California, and that's toward the very end of October.
Okay.
And my website, I should say, is www.kimroby.com, K-I-M-R-O-B-Y.
And you also have, what is your next book coming out, if you can kind of give the reader something to look forward to?
Well, that was the book that I was talking about called The Perfect Marriage, about the husband and wife, the one dealing with the prescription drugs, Vicodin, and the other dealing with cocaine. So that's coming January 8th, and then May 7th of next year will be the next book in my Reverend Curtis Black series. Don't have a title yet. It's actually the 10th book in the series and my 18th title. And then coming in October of next year, I have a Christmas novella being released. So in 2013, this will be the first time I actually have three books coming out. So I'm really, really excited about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, great. I wanted to ask, the latest book, it did hit the New York Times, didn't it?
It did, yes. It actually hit the New York Times list based on the first week of sales at number 13. That's the highest I've ever made it on the list in my career, of the top 150 for the first week for USA Today. It was a number 69. That was my highest for that. Number 14 for Publishers Weekly, and it was my highest for that as well. So it's just really been a great journey all along, but it's certainly been a great journey this last couple of months. Readers have just showed so much support and so much loyalty and so much love. And, you know, of course, as a writer, and you know this, you can't do anything without your readers. And I remember when I was getting the information from my editor-in-chief at Grand Central, you know, I was literally in tears because I love what I do. God has blessed me to have this career, you know, but most importantly, he's blessed me to have readers that just have stood by me through it all from beginning to end, and they continue to do that and continue to ask for the next book, and that's what keeps me going, because if they weren't doing that, I don't think I could continue, and so I'm just really, really grateful for that.
Yeah, that's good. And each book is probably, you know, more word of mouth for each book, because in my case, I've read your first three or four books, and then I haven't read the Reverend series, and then I read your last book. So now I've got to go back. So you're continually picking up readers, too.
I sure hope so. That's wonderful to hear.
Yes, and plus you've always done a lot of marketing. We didn't get to talk about your marketing, but I noticed that you use Ella Curry, and I'm crazy about her. I plan to use her again. I hadn't used her for my last book, and I saw the difference, so I'm back with her. So how long have you used her for the online marketing?
Oh, gosh, I've been working with Ella now. I would say this is probably the third or fourth book, so maybe a little over 2 years, and, you know, she's just great at what she does. She's really passionate about books and promoting them to readers and interacting with readers and book clubs, and it just really makes a world of difference. I mean, she just does what she says she's going to do, and I'm always just appreciative of it. And, you know, you can look up, and next thing you know, there's a post from Ella. You know, she's doing whatever she has to get the word out. And online marketing has become extremely important more than ever before. I mean, the Internet really is the big part of what we have to do if we want to connect with our readers and get the word out about our work. So, you know, we're talking about websites and social media and, you know, all of the above. We really have to do everything that we can. And blogs, you know, that's another big thing. And, you know, getting your work at least even mentioned on blogs, you know, or getting interviews done on blogs. And so it just makes a difference. And so I feel like sometimes now I work harder now than when I first started out. And I feel like I have to do that in order to continue.
Yes, to stay out there, and you've stayed out there consistently and grown. I remember you used to be on the road a lot. I used to see where you were here and there, and so it's kind of good in a way that there's more Internet marketing that can be done. You don't have to travel as much as you used to either.
And that's true, because I do. I mean, I travel for the tours, but not as much on some of those off months. You know, it used to be where it seemed like, you know, my husband and I, we were never home. It was, you know, one event after another. And so, yeah, it does make a difference, because now I can communicate with readers, which I do daily on Facebook and Twitter. I mean, sometimes throughout the day, depending on what I have going on. And it's really enjoyable. It is just rewarding to be able to connect with your readers in almost real time, to be honest.
Yes, it's really nice. What is your Twitter handle and your Facebook?
My Facebook page is www.facebook.com/KimberlaLawsonRoby, and my Twitter handle is Kimberla L. Roby.
All right. Well, we're at the top of the hour, Kimberla, and I thank you so much for coming back on the show. I'll have you back when your next book comes out. I'm enjoying watching how your career has just blossomed. You have been blessed by God, but you have also worked hard and earned every bit of what you're, you know, I've seen how hard you've worked over the years. And
Thank you.
I met you in 2000 at a cruise, and then I seen you at the National Book Club Conference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't do a lot of traveling anymore, so just I know I've seen online how many places you go. So this is, you know, writers, if this is what you want to do, you have to work hard. This isn't where I think so many people thought that it was just the red carpet gets rolled out. This is also a labor of love, too. You
mm-hmm.
have to work at this.
You really do. You do. You know, we do it because we love it, and at the same time, you have to treat it as a business. And so that really can make a difference for you.
Yes, and you did kind of go, when you self-published, you used kind of a business model to get your books out there. I remember reading about it in Essence Magazine.
Yes, I did. I pretty much did from the very beginning. I, you know, really thought of it as, you know, what happens if somebody was trying to sell a product? I mean, that's really how I started out. It's just that I had readers instead of customers. I didn't see my readers as customers. And, you know, I just treated them as, you know, women who were no different than me, who might be interested in reading the kinds of stories that I thought I enjoyed reading. And, you know, just kind of went from there. And the word of mouth really traveled.
Well, that is great. So continued success and God bless.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on and for all your support, and I look forward to speaking to you next time.
All right. You're welcome. Have
okay.
a great day.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Please return next week to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. We'll have Sheila Goss, national best-selling author, and her new series, Under Sparkle, Sade's Secret. Love you all. Bye-bye.